Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We're looking at how companies can ready themselves for the future. In fact, there is a particular indicator called Future Readiness Indicator, created by IMD. And of course, that is an indicator that is trying to see how well a company is future-proofing itself. So joining us from Lausanne in Switzerland is Howard Yu, the LEGO Professor of Management and Innovation and Head of IMD's Center for Future Readiness. Let's look at the core research that you are doing, which is, of course, the Future Readiness Indicator, a rule-based indicator and methodology that measures a company's readiness for the long term and some aspects of circular trends being incorporated into it. Maybe you can talk to us in terms of how does a company ready itself for the future?
That's a great question. So we get curious about this question around how do company preparing for an uncertain future. I think if we learn anything out of the last 18 months is we are living in a world of exploding ambiguity. Out of the pandemic now is the looming recession. And so every executives and CEO I came across, they are always worried and their more main focus is how can I future-proof my organization? And that is really the starting point of the entire research endeavor. So you're right. We are using hard data as a composite balance scorecard to gauge which company are most future ready. We will talk about a little bit about this industry specific insight, whether it's in the sector of technology, pharmaceutical or consumer brand. But what we're seeing is future ready organization, they also share universal behavior and outlook. And this is where the interesting element becomes. No matter what setting you're in, there are universal lessons learned we could apply in our own unique environment.
And how does IMD itself approach this particular subject?
That's a really interesting question. Primarily, the need came out through my executive training portfolio. So at IMD, I mostly teach senior executive during custom program or open program. And of course, historically, business schools around the world, we write a lot of case studies and doing a lot of in-depth discussion and interviews with industry leaders. But the problem with that approach is sometimes literally we bark on the wrong trees, meaning we may not really be able to identify companies that are truly leading in terms of their industry thoughts as well as practice. And if you jump very quickly to do in-depth interviews, you may just uncover something that overall is not very leading edge. So, out of that frustration, we develop a methodology, as we just described. It's a balance scorecard so that we could, in fact, identify who are the leading players across time throughout this long history. Then you could back it up with more in-depth interviews and inquiry. I'll give you two examples. It's interesting that from time to time, you would observe companies start from a very similar place and then they diverge. For example, General Electric historically been an iconic player in industrial space. Honeywell is also in a similar place as well. And over the last 15 years, their fortune diverged. One is become stronger and stronger, reflected in earning as well as in reflected in share price, but also the way of their future readiness over a long period of time. That contrast of a winner as well as a loser becomes a starting point for us to do in-depth interviews inside each company to unpack what causes some company to be stronger and more future ready, what choices that manager have made wrongly to lead them to a disastrous outcome. And I think it is important to have both quantitative and qualitative inquiry over the long run. And this is why we have developed what we did. So, let's pick one industry like the consumer brand industry, since we all wear different clothes. Some of you may love high-end fashion and some of you may like sneakers. So let's talk about the industry where there's Nike, Adidas, as well as LVMH and Gucci. The way we're looking at future-ready brand, for instance, they have to perform while transform at the same time. It's not either or. Any future-ready organization, even when recession comes, They must, of course, have a strong balance sheet, you know, as little debt as possible while having a strong cash reserve. They have to deliver their near-term profitability, such as EBITDA growth, revenue growth, and profit growth. But future-ready organization, they have to build up also new capabilities as well. In the area of consumer brand, today, of course, is online and offline. There's no more boundary. Some forward-looking brands such as Nike and Lululemon, they have forged this direct-to-consumer relationship. In the past, any major brand, you essentially rely on third-party retailers, department store, big third-party retailers. If you're online, you might leverage on existing other online store. Today, the game is really you build and forge that direct-to-consumer relationship. Whether you're LVMH and Gucci or whether you're Nike or Lululemon, you have to do that. So we're looking at a brand value from that perspective. Do people search a lot on your Google trend? Is there instant followers directly hang on to your brand? What about TikTok influencer? And also we track, of course, new product innovation at the same time. Whether it's a new app, whether this is new product, do they scale across region? Keeping in mind, these days, geographic or product diversity is really important. You have to constantly push yourself beyond the existing boundary, and that defines the future readiness companies. And the last, ESG, employee diversity. In order to transform, you need to think outside the box. So the top management team, we really take it seriously to looking at the CEO background all the way to the management team background to ensure there is diversity of thoughts as reflected whether it's gender, nationality, industry background, so that the organization can keep seeing around the corners and not to be mired with internal perspective. So in short, it's a balanced scorecard. And of course, again, we try to use the same method, but there are different variables we infuse across different industries.
Specific geographies require specific items, I would presume. Maybe you can talk to us to that effect.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what makes a future-ready organization these days is they could really cater local needs of the local audience. Like take Southeast Asia as an example, the consumer taste and dynamic is so different, jumping across different country, right? Despite we are belonging to the same region. And that means that a future-ready companies, they must deliver product and solution relevant to the local taste and local need. Meanwhile, you need to have a simple IT backbone so that the learning from one place, say Malaysia, could potentially roll out with a tweak to Singapore, with a strong adjustment roll out to Vietnam, etc. That requires strong culture of learning as well as strong IT backbone for you to scale up these practices. Meanwhile, allowing the local manager to be very, very entrepreneurial to custom and cater the local need.
All right. We'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more with Howard Yu of IMD. Thanks for staying with us. On the line right now is Howard Yu, the head of IMD's Center for Future Readiness. He's joining us from Lausanne. Let's talk a little bit more in terms of what kind of leaders are required to lead companies into the future, especially in the context of the Future Readiness Indicator.
This is a great question. And I think what happened as our research continued to unfold, what we understood is a future-ready organization depend upon future-ready employees as individuals as well. So think about this way. Any future-ready companies, they're able to push the industry boundary, require executive as well as individual employees to be inquisitive. Now, being inquisitive is slightly different than just being curious. Being curious sometimes is not having a strong focus, but being inquisitive, you essentially channel the organization energy all the way to individual level for purpose-driven expansion of your thinking. And this mark future-ready company versus those who are less so. So one idea here is for executives to prepare themselves, you need to constantly expanding and learning from different industry. One thing that we've learned is future-ready companies, they don't benchmark their peer group. If you are a pharmaceutical company, for instance, you don't just benchmark with other pharmaceutical company. If you're a bank, right? People talk about fintech innovation in the region a lot. If you're a traditional bank, you cannot benchmark yourself with other traditional bank and trying to become future ready. You cannot just benchmark in fintech per se, but you need to look directly going to the source, to the IT sector. How do they prepare that turbulent environment? And this is what we've learned for executive, individual manager, individual employee, they can always become future ready themselves by expanding their repertoire so that you become more valuable to your company. You increase your market mobility. Ultimately, the organization is becoming better as well because there's a critical mass of future ready managers inside.
Another item that I want to explore is in terms of generational leaders. Do we expect the younger generation to be naturally inclined in terms of being future ready? Or do we expect a lot of maturity from the current and present and old generation to lead the young into the future? What would be some of the mix that you can share with us when it comes to generational leaders, the young and the old? Who is much more important in this regard?
Yeah, both. Because any major corporate transformation cannot just rely on the young generation or the lifer or the old timer senior executive. You need both to work together for the following reason. In order for an organization to transform, the domain knowledge is really important. If you're a car company that you want to transform in one of our sector, we look at most future ready car company beyond just Tesla, every car company needs to transform. And you basically requiring the domain knowledge, you still need to build a great car. Meanwhile, you build up the new capability, whether it's software design, battery, or even chipset design. That required new expertise. So any future ready company who are able to perform and transform, you essentially working across different level of the hierarchy. So in that many regard, the best example is that you could develop a small team of people who are having a strong mission to inquire a certain area, let's say fintech innovation. So you have the senior echelon of the organization together with the younger generation, as you said, they have a full of idea to have very purpose-driven investigation. What is changing outside? And then back it out a little bit, trying to sense make. This is where you need the old master as well as the new thought blending together to think independently to forge your path of innovation going forward. So the most compelling example I've seen is always this perfect blend of liver as well as new joiner together.
So what risks do you think lie ahead, especially when it comes to trying to ascertaining or spotting these risks? How do you suggest we navigate these kind of risks?
Two risks. One is complacency. The second one is the lack of persistence. They are a little related, but for the following. Sometimes what I've seen is company did a major innovation and they are on a good track, but then it becomes a one-hit wonder. The company felt like, oh, this is enough and this is an end state. Being future ready is quite different. Essentially is constant work in progress. And if you don't continue to advance, you backslide. And so this is the area where companies sometimes getting into trap. We have invested so much acquiring company or doing a venture collaboration. We're done. No, it's never done, period. It's a hard truth, but it is true. Second, is this idea that you need to persist. Some other company becoming unfocused. This year, they want to develop stronger relationship in, let's say, e-channel, e-commerce. The next year, they want to go big on metaverse. And year after is about Six Sigma and efficiency. That's not good. Really bad. Because anything that gains traction requires years of persistence. Again, when I'm looking at Nike, they build that direct-to-consumer relationship throughout 15 years of effort. 15 years. Generation of CEO are persisting in the same direction that use outcomes. So the second pitfall is people don't have enough patience. They switch and swap. And when there is something of a lack of immediate payback, they gave up too early. Again, you look at Amazon, right? These days in the tech sector, it is trending really high on our readiness indicator. They still continue to understand how can they build up more of brick and mortar store, the offline store. They've started back in 2017. It's still not scaling up yet, but they're accumulating learning till today, even when IT sector is having so much headwind. So it takes persistence to learn the real knowledge.
Now let's take a look into some of the companies that we can think of right now. Google, Tesla, Nike, we're talking about Pfizer, Roche, Alibaba, and Meta. These kind of companies, we normally want to talk about them because they are leaders of their own specific sectors. And perhaps there is this, I guess, a bias towards how these companies are future-proofing themselves. Do you feel that these kind of companies have something that can be shared when it comes to learning how they are future-proofing themselves? And how does this contrast with, say, for instance, other companies right now in the market?
Yeah. So one thing that we have seen so far across our sector, putting purpose to the center of your growth strategy is absolutely key. So this is why the ESG whole agenda becomes more and more important. But fundamentally, here is why. If you look at Nike, their purpose is to enable everyone to be more athletic. If you have a warm body, you can be an athlete. That's the purpose, not about selling sneakers. For pharmaceutical giant who top out ranking like Roche, Pfizer, and AstraZeneca, it's not just whatever mRNA vaccine. That's secondary. But they are so much gearing towards the next scientific frontier to develop new way for drug discovery. So happened the COVID vaccine is one of the, you know, output. But mRNA technology can cure many, many diseases from cancer to other immunotherapy as well. So they put Center for Growth essentially is pushing the scientific frontier to eliminate human diseases versus some other pharmaceutical company that are less aspiring is to make more money. That's the difference. And if you're looking at global automotive industry, right, of course, the energy transition is top agenda. Again, it requires lots of investment, CapEx, as well as investment in new areas as well, battery, whatnot. Now, that requires difficult trade-off. If you don't put purpose to the center core, all this trade-off, you would bias towards the known world, your old business model. And ultimately, over the long run, you fall behind of the latest innovation. So I think that putting purpose to the center growth related to ESG become more and more important. And we see the financial market also notice that.
The final areas of concern that I want to explore would be the companies in this part of the world. I'm not just talking about the GLCs and the MNCs and the SOEs. I'm talking about, say, the SMEs per se as well. How do you feel small and medium-sized enterprises can better future-proof themselves moving forward?
Absolutely. What I see is a nasty relationship. Just because we're talking about tech giant and all that doesn't mean that the local lesson cannot be delivered to any SME or even startup company in the local region. So one thing for 2023, what we see is the future ready organization, they are all having a much more diverse product portfolio. Because in the past, when time is good, you're one hit wonder, you're, you know, unicorn, you win. But today is this balancing act that you need to have a more diverse product portfolio so that you could hedge a risk against any one of the single vertical. So diversification is key, either geographical region or product diversity. So this, I think, is pretty much shown. Second is whether you're a tech giant or consumer brand, they're all trying to build up a strong cash reserve. So you hear the hiring freeze and all that is in large part to preserve some cash saving for the rainy days. So I think this is also a key lesson learned across different regions across the world, certainly applicable to Southeast Asia. And one last thing that I observe is also just because you're prioritizing doesn't mean you cut off innovation across the board. All these future-ready companies, they reprioritize, but they focus. They used whatever cutback, the remaining bit, to channel to one or maximum two strategic endeavor and keep it going. And I think this is absolutely key. Just because we need to preserve cash doesn't mean that you cut all innovation across the board. It just forces us to prioritize better so that you would pick and stay with that one main thing. You and your team will continue to persist. So these are the three elements we've seen.
Because of this, how much investments do you think is needed to enter this space in future-proofing themselves? Maybe you can talk about, say, percentages of revenue, for instance, so how we do it for R&D, for instance, or special project management office. Do we need that kind of thing in order for us to future-proof ourselves better? And some other operational items that you can share with us in terms of how companies can move forward when it comes to future-proofing themselves?
Yeah, so in pharmaceutical or in automotive, we've seen is they will stash against money, like you said, in terms of R&D, whether it's drug pipeline or product management. Now, in consumer brand, investment, not so much around R&D per se, but more like the investment into the brand itself, so brand investment. But you could think about, broadly speaking, when you have the money to spare, you've got to invest some of these to rid the organization from complexity. Whether it's the latest technology, simplification, because simplification, what we've seen is future-ready company inside the organization, they're all simple, period, so that you can stay agile with the changing marketplace. So essentially, you need to pay off your technical debt, not your financial debt. You channel your earning to pay off the technical debt so that the organization is always simple so that you can adjust as the marketplace continue to rapidly evolve. So think about that as one of the R&D bucket as well, simplification.
Thank you very much, Howard. Any final word?
Well, you know, let's keep the conversation going. And there are so many research keep on coming up. And so on our website, we try to democratize the insight. So feel free to check out all our interactive graph on the Future Readiness website.
Right. Thank you very much, Howard. That was a very interesting conversation. That was Howard Yu, the Lego Professor of Management and Innovation and head of IMD's Center for Future Readiness. We're talking about how a future readiness indicator can be actually used for companies to see and benchmark themselves in terms of how ready they are for the future. You can read more on IMD's website. Meanwhile, do stay with us on Astro Awani. There are plenty of news that can be brought forward to you. They are available on astroawani.com or on channel 501 on Astro. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.